Okay, so as I said in the post, I want to talk about fetuses in halacha, but not about abortion. I think as we saw by the responses when Roe v. Wade was overturned, that Judaism's position on abortion is very nuanced. There's different opinions, and most of those opinions have a lot of nuance. Another, I guess, difference between Judaism's position and, I would say, like the classical Christian position on abortion is that it actually might not have to do with whether the fetus exists or not, because the existence of a fetus has ramifications in a variety of areas of halacha, one of them being abortion, but others have to do with transactions. Can you give something to a fetus? Can you bequeath something to a fetus? Can you marry a fetus? And so in all of those areas of halacha, decision about whether it exists or not might be different. And there's also different categories. Like some of you may have been familiar with the 40-day thing, which is when typically we could begin to see it. So the question is, well, who cares? Who cares if you can see it or not? Mm-hmm. Should that make a difference or not? Does the fact that you can see it mean that it exists and before that it didn't? As we'll see, that might not matter either, even though for abortion some people say it does. So the two areas that I want to talk about today are transactions and specifically bequests in halacha, as well as kiddushin, getting married. So just as a little bit of background, there are two types of, aside from the classical Yerusha, So aside from the classical standard Yerusha, which is when somebody dies, automatically their assets get passed down to halachic next of kin. Aside from that, there are two other ways that you can transfer assets to somebody close to your time of death. The first is what we would call a matnas bari, which is a gift. Literally, we translate that as a gift of somebody who's healthy. So you have somebody that's not on their deathbed, but, you know, they're getting older. And so they say, I want to give this to somebody. I have a car. I want to give it to them after I die. So that's one sort of category, or I want to give it to them the moment before I die. I don't want to get into all the nitty-gritty of Hilchos Yerusha. But that's one classic case, matnas bari. The other, which in the ninth parak of Bava Basra talks about a lot, is called a matnas shchiv meira. So the case of shchiv meira is somebody that's on their deathbed. And the matna shchiv meira is you're on your deathbed and you say, I want to give this to somebody. I want to give part of my assets to somebody. There are several differences between a matnas bari, or a classic gift, and a matna shchiv meira, this special type of one when you're on your deathbed. The main difference, and especially for our purpose, the main difference, is that by a regular matana, we need to do a kinyan. We need to do some symbolic act. That's why, like, when we sell our chametz, or we gift our chametz to somebody, that we do a pen. Or there's another, if you buy something from somebody or you give something to somebody as a gift for Shabbos or before Shabbos, you have to acquire it. You have to pick it up. You have to drag it. You have to do something. That's how normal kinyanim work. A matna shchiv meira does not require that. A matna shchiv meira, you can just say it, and it works. So the question, which will...
What's the literal translation of that?
So shchiv meira means somebody that's lying down or bedridden because of bad. Essentially, they're lying down because of some impending doom. So that case is somebody that's on their deathbed. So why there's that difference, we'll get to. But let's look at source number one. So in source number one, this is an excerpt from the ninth parak of Bava Basra. So that Gemara is talking about a case. Nice. That Gemara is talking about a case of what's known as mizake le'ubar. It's the case that we were talking about. Somebody wants to bequest their assets to an unborn child. So somebody is pregnant. Now, it doesn't say that it's their wife or not, meaning you could have a, you know, somebody, you could just have a friend who's pregnant and you want to give it to their unborn child, or it could be your wife and you want to say, I specifically want my unborn child to get the car. So the Gemara says, Hamizake le'ubar lo kana, that if you say that, if you say, I want to give this this car to an unborn child, it doesn't work. V'im tomar mishnah seinu, but if you'll ask, our mishnah seems to contradict that. So the Gemara answers, ho'el v'daito shel adam krova eitzel v'no. No, that case is different because we're talking about a father to their unborn child or their unborn son. And that's different. That works, unlike other cases, because daito shel adam krova eitzel b'no. The das, or the intent of a father, is very close to their son. So that's the operative phrase here, which is very ambiguous. So, okay, because the father thinks really hard about their son, so now it magically works. So we'll see. We'll see why that's different. We'll see why that's different, and it's a machlokas. The question, though, before we get to the why, is actually the scope of this kula, right? So the case of the Gemara is mizake le'ubar, somebody that wants to gift something to somebody. But as I had just said, there are two cases of gifts. There is a matnas bari and a matnas shriv meira. The Gemara doesn't seem to give us a clue as to which one it is.
Well, isn't it just saying that the distinction of, no, in our case, in the Mishnah, it's when it's a father's being mizake to his son, but in this case where it's stam, we're saying it doesn't work because that case is not the case of our Mishnah, meaning not a father.
Right, so that's one set of variables, meaning father versus non-father, but the other set of variables is what type of gift are we talking about? Are we talking about a classical halachic bequest, or are we talking about the special deathbed bequest?
Oh, okay. Meaning this is that's the second confounding variable.
Right. So we just don't know. The Gemara is ambiguous. So it's a machlokas. If you look in source number two, the Sefer HaIter, one of the Rishonim, so he says v'hilchasa hamizaka l'uber lo kana b'uber da'achrini. It only you can't bequest something to an unborn child when it's somebody else's kid. Avo b'uber di de kani. It works if it's your own kid. V'chein das ha'ga'onim. This is the opinion of the Gaonim. V'chein kasav Reb Shimon Kaira, Reb Shimon of Cairo. It's unclear if he was one of the Gaonim or, you know, a later person. Umistabra afilu b'toch mem yom shel yetziras havlad lo ba'inan hakaras ubar. So the Baal HaIter says that it doesn't even need to be within 40 days. So, it doesn't need to be after 40 days. Meaning, even if somehow you know that your wife is pregnant, even if there are no visible signs, it doesn't matter. It exists, and therefore you can give it to them. From there, what does it sound like? Is it specifically matnas shriv meira, or even a matnas bari? Does it have to be specifically on a deathbed, or it could be anything?
Anything.
Yeah, sounds like anything.
What? Why? Meaning because the. We're talking now because there's no meaning because you can't make a kinyan.
So we'll get to the why. We'll get to the why in a second.
Meaning,
we'll get to the why.
Might have kamina between the shiv meira and a regular, whether it's your son or somebody else's son.
I'm sorry.
If the consideration is this, well, it only works if it's a shiv meira.
Yeah.
Then what's the difference if it's your kid or somebody else's? That's
kid? A good question. That's
right?
A good question.
And then, If it does matter, is it because of this? Is something in the nature of the shriv meira that you're like you're because what you're what you just said kind of you kind of
you, I hinted.
You, you,
we'll
you
say,
hit
we'll,
the
we'll,
lead. Okay,
we'll get there. No, I'm saying it's an important consideration. I just want to highlight the other opinion first, which is if you look in source number three, the Sefer Hamekach v'Hamemkar. So this was one of the first halachos farim that was ever written beyond the Gemara. By Rav Haigon at the end of the Gaonim. So the Baal HaIter quoted most of the Gaonim. Rav Haigon, the last one, basically takes his own opinion. Rav Haigon argues, and he says, Hadin harishonim amar uber shebimei ishti, o uber shebimei isha plonis, yikne hachefetz ze ploni, bein belashon mechar, bein belashon matana, lo kana osa uber velo midi, afal pi sheyatza, La'avir ha'olam oso ubar v'hu ben das v'hu roi achshav l'chol kinyan sheba olam. He says, doesn't matter whether it's my kid or whether it's somebody else's kid. If at the time that I said it, they weren't born yet, and I give it to them as a standard gift, even after they're born, doesn't matter. Even if you do a kinyan afterwards, mikomakom, nevertheless, kaven shiba oso sha shuhukona hayabi meimo velo yatsir laavir haolam. Since at the time that you said this, he was still in his mother's womb and he didn't come out yet, ein lo zechia ba oso kinyan. He doesn't have a kinyan. Why? To amar Rabbi Yitzchak, amar Rabbi Yochanan hamazavka leuber lo kana. And that's the end of Rav Haigo. So all the Mefarshim point out, well, hey, what about the second half of the Gemara that we just read? So they are medayik that it must be that Rav Haigon argues with all of the other Gaonim and says that that Gemara is only talking about a Matnas Shchiv Meira. And this is actually the opinion of the Rif and the Rimagash as well. I didn't bring them down just to save space. But Rav Haigon has a clear, I would say, Misora that continues down basically to the Rambam. So Rav Haigon's Talmidim went to North Africa, Rabbeinu Hanano and Rav Chushio. Then their Talmidim became, you know, led into the Rif, who was the Rebbe of the Rimagash, who was the Rebbe of Rav Maimon, who was the Rebbe of the Rambam. So we'll get to the Rambam now in a second, but this opinion of Rav Haigon goes down to the Rif and to the Rimagash, and as we'll see, the Rambam in the Pirush HaMishnah also subscribes to that. You look in source number 4, this is the Rambam in the Pirush HaMishnah. See, he says the same thing. He says, Min ha'ikarim etzleinu, the principles from our Mishnah, hamazaka le'uber lo kana. You try to give a gift to a fetus, it doesn't work. Ki lo tiskayem hahakna ela le'adam matsui bipoal. Because a transaction or an acquisition can only occur to a person that is matsui bepoel. How would you translate that?
Found in action or in actuality?
Yeah, I guess like found lemaisa, found literally. V'hu ubar eino kein. And an ubar is not. So it's a very interesting phrase. I mean, the Rambam is acknowledging a certain reality. The Rambam doesn't differentiate between after 40 days or before 40 days. You could see this woman that's very pregnant, and if you did a sonogram, you'd see something inside of her, but it's not called here yet. And so the Rambam is bothered by, like, well, why should that be? How can you deny that it's here?
Well, he says bepoel, which is
right.
Very specific.
And that's the Rambam's point. So the Rambam says the reason why is because that for halachic transactions, it needs to be actually in existence. We'll see. A little bit later, in source number 8, the Rimagash says, "Well, what happens if What happens if the woman gives birth, but the child is stillborn?" So then he says, he paskins that even at the time that it was in his mother's, when he was in his mother's womb, he retroactively becomes in existence because that's the most existence that he'll get. It's a very interesting idea. And that's where the Rambam got that phrase, Matsui Bepo. We'll see it a little bit later. But the Rambam, at least in the Pirush HaMishnah, believes that existence is relative with respect to how much more you'll develop. So a fetus will ultimately become qualitatively much more in existence once it's born. But if it's not actually going to be born alive, then it's just inside a shell and it won't actually change much.
Rav Haigon doesn't necessarily agree with that, though, right?
Rav Haigon doesn't say that explicitly.
Right, I mean, that doesn't seem like a necessary part of it.
It does not need to necessarily be part of that, no. But we'll see the Rimagash that it seems like the Rambam was at least influenced by that.
It seems like you're extrapolating it out to, like, personhood, when here he's talking very specifically about being mekane something, which is like this financial transaction.
Correct.
But we're only talking about it as you're like, well, the person, clearly they exist. Yeah, but that doesn't mean it can effectuate financial transactions. It doesn't mean to invalidate its existence, mm-hmm, as a thing or as even a person. But it might not just be a person who can. It's just like if you don't have das, right? You can't do certain transactions.
Yeah.
Maybe you can't be mekane something without das.
So that, right? So we'll look at how the Rambam phrases it in the Yad HaChazaka in a second. But that's exactly my point. Meaning, I think to say that the debate of whether a fetus exists or doesn't exist is the wrong question to ask in halacha. Irrespective...
In halacha or in this?
No, in halacha at all, because there are different metrics for everything.
Right.
Interesting.
Because there are different metrics for everything. For kinyanim, according to the Rambam, the Pirush HaMishnah, it's matsui b'poa, which means how relatively much do you exist or not? How relatively much do you exist or not?
I don't know, could I exist before. Not just the way you're phrasing, because now it's nuanced, right? You're like, exist or not exist? It's like, no. It's personhood within financial transactions. I agree with
right.
you. You're
so,
saying
so
like,
fetuses... Right, so for financial transactions, the Rambam believes the metric is, are you in sort of, so to speak, your fullest level of existence in this world?
I mean, you're extrapolating that out after meaning because of like this other place where he's saying that.
Correct. Okay. Yeah.
Does financial transactions or halacha need to be a person? Like, I mean, could it be like a corporate entity?
Yes.
Like
so,
a body of...
Right. So that's an interesting question. Meaning we're talking about kinyanim. So can you have a kinyan for a corporation? It's an interesting question. I would think that you need to have a representative for it. Meaning you need to have an agent
right.
on behalf of the corporation. But if I just say I'm making a kinyan to a corporation, I don't know if that would work or not. I would think it does, but because like it exists,
right.
It's a legal entity.
But I'm just trying to say, is it the personhood, like kind of what Jad is saying, is the personhood aspect even related to whether or not the financial transaction could exist in this specific
So I don't know scenario. So I don't know if personhood per se, I just think
right.
you as an entity.
Right.
Meaning, right, so I don't know if personhood, I think entity is the better way to phrase it.
Right.
Corporations are just, are groups of people. You can't have a corporation
I want to get into that. That might not be true. Corporations might not be groups of people.
Well, can you have a corporation that doesn't represent anyone?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have another corporation who sits on the corporation. Do it all the time.
That's true.
And where in the, maybe I'm missing it, where in the realm does it say relative to his potential or relative?
So that's, I'm using that phrase of Matsui Bepoal, and then I'll later combine, I guess, okay, you know, let's see the Rimagash. Okay, let's look at source number 8. This is the Rimagash. Mikevan Demis, so he's talking about a case where it was a stillborn. So Mikevan Demis, since it passed away, Vinisbarer She'emno Omed Liyoled, Vilatzes La'avir Ha'olam, and so, since now it never stands to enter into the world and be born, igloy milsalem afreya, demisha shenotzar v'nichnis habo neshama, that from the moment that it was created and was imbued with a soul, na'ase adam, it became a person. So, people say that the Rambam's language of Matzev Poel was inspired by this Rimagash, his grand Rebbe, so to speak. So if you combine those two, if you combine those two languages, that's where I'm getting this idea that for kinyanim, existence is relative. Okay, so if we stopped here with the Rambam, we actually didn't finish the Rambam. So go back to source 4. If you go to the last line,
but he's
talking about a stillborn.
The Rimagash?
Yeah, the Rimagash.
The Rimagash, this was in the realm of Kinyan?
In the realm of Kinyan, yeah. So go to the second line in source number 4. V'hagorim kan l'kach sheyikna ma shenosein lo aviv. And so what about in our case where it does work by the father? L'fi she'daito shel adam krova etzel bino. Because of that phrase again, that a person, a father's das is close to his son. And therefore, the only thing that exists is what the father is able to give him. And so the Rambam subscribes to the Rimagash and to the Rif and to Rav Haigon and says that this exception is only by matna shchiv meira, that a father can give it to an unborn child. If it's a regular gift, a father can't give it to a fetus either. The Rambam in the Yad HaChazaka, though, seems to disagree. So now look at source number 5. So the Rambam in Hilchos Mechira says, "Kishem she'ein adam makne davar shelo bo la'olam." Just like a person can't give you something that doesn't exist yet, kach ein adam makne lemi shelo bo la'olam. You also can't give something to somebody that doesn't exist yet. Va'afilu uvar, and even a fetus, harehu ki mi shelo bo la'olam. And a fetus, even a fetus, is like something that isn't here yet. V'hamizake l'uber lo kana. And therefore it doesn't work if you try to give it as a gift. V'im haya bino, and if it's his son, ho v'daitel shel adam krova eitzel bino, kana. But if we're talking about a father to a son, then it works because his mind is connected. Now, does the Rambam mention Matna Shchiv Meira here? No. There's no mention of Matna Shchiv Meira. The Rambam in the Yad seems to change his opinion and go like the Balo Itzer and like the Gaonim against his Rebbeim and says that, no, you don't. Doesn't need to be a Matna Shchiv Meira. Any type of gift, as long as it's a father to a child, it works. Because of Daita Shel Adam Krova Eitzel Bino. I also want to highlight that the Rambam's language seems to be a little bit stronger here about the existence of the fetus. He says in the Yad, it's like it doesn't exist, meaning it does exist, but there's some like technical things that make it like it's not. As opposed to his language in the Pirush HaMishnah, where it says that it's not fully there yet.
I don't even, but I'm not sure that, I feel like you go both ways with that.
Okay, you could go both ways, but once you see now, but once you put, correct, when you combine that with the fact that he changed his opinion. So what prompted that change of opinion? Well, it would seem like what prompted his change of opinion is that he now thinks of the Ubar differently.
Because the matzah before was like a very, it's a very technically defined, he's not getting into whether he exists or not at all. So
okay, so I'm working with the assumption that matzah before means at least somewhat of a relative existence. But I guess that's an assumption I'm making.
You were saying that Motzei Bepoel infers that there's an existence, but it's the wrong kind of existence.
I don't know, wrong kind, but it's
not the right kind.
It's qualitatively less.
Right.
It's qualitatively less.
Yeah. And here he's saying it's like it doesn't exist.
It's like it doesn't exist.
Aren't those the same thing?
No, they're like it doesn't exist means that it exists.
And Motzei Bepoel means it exists, but it's not in the... It's not able to effectuate change in the world. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Right. Again, obviously the Rambam, I think, in both places is grappling with this tension that, like, it's here, but it's not here. But once you essentially... once we see that he changed his opinion about Ubar from one to the other, meaning he wrote the Erechazaka later. So once he changed his mind... So I'm going to, again, I'm sort of drawing a target around the arrow here. I'm sort of reverse engineering it. But I'm working under the assumption that if he changed his opinion, the mashmos of the language will also change.
Why do we have to assume he changed his opinion?
Because he changed his psak.
But there's room here to say that there's a case difference.
No, there's no case difference. The Rambam in the Pirush HaMishnah explicitly says that I'm only talking about Matna Shchiv Meira, and the Rambam in Hilchos Mechira doesn't differentiate at all.
Couldn't you say that it's not, when it isn't a mission?
He's talking about all cases in Yad HaChazaka.
Why do you assume that?
Because he doesn't say not. The Rambam is very specific in the Yad. If he was qualifying, he'd qualify.
Fair enough.
The weird part about the whole thing is in the Pirush HaMishnah, he makes a statement that this kinyan works, and then he makes the qualification.
Right.
He didn't need to do that. He could have done it differently. He could have specified that this is more central to Shchiv Meira from the get-go.
Interesting.
Meaning he only adds that detail on later. I mean, I don't disagree with you. Leaving it out is leaving it out. At the end of the day, he leaves it out. But he initially makes a statement in the Pirush HaMishnah without this, you know, and then he adds it on, by the way, it only is true with the Shchiv Meira.
Right.
Anyways,
I hear. It's a good point. So now to try to sort of explain or make sense of this transition, I just want to give two different explanations as to what Daito Shel Adam Krov Eisel Bino means, or how it works. There's two classical understandings. The Rambam never actually explains the mechanics. But in the Rishonim, there are two standard explanations. The Rashbam, in source number 6, he says it very succinctly, Gomar Umakna Bechol Libo. He gives it over with a full heart, meaning he loves his kid, he's connected to his kid, and so he gives it over, implying that when it's not your kid, there's something, you know, there's something about your mind that's making it not final. So why should that be? Meaning, why when it's your kid is it more final than somebody else's kid?
Where do we see the language of Gemara Machna?
This is the Rashbam in source number 6.
Because you're kind of giving it yourself almost. Like, okay. For example, Yerusha, because that's what this feels like a little bit. It's like, if you don't do anything, let's assume, with your son or your child, they're going to inherit it anyway. It's almost like Shevi Atase versus Kumbase. Like, if you don't do anything, it's going to transfer to your child.
Okay.
That's assuming, this is all central around, like, why it, you know, something Davar Shlomo Ohm doesn't work in the first place.
Yes,
right?
That's where I'm leading up to here. Yeah, exactly.
In other words, if it's a das problem, then sure.
Exactly, right. So the Rashbam seems to understand that it's a das problem, meaning, what does it mean that it's a das problem when someone's not here? Because I don't really think it's real.
Right.
Something may happen in the
interim. Meaning the person who's giving it doesn't, it's not, they're like not really giving it.
Right. So the point of, in order for a kinyan or a transaction to work, I need to have in my mind that I am giving up my ownership to give to someone else. If the object isn't really here yet, or the other recipient really isn't here
really
yet,
mean it if I'm
I can't mean right. There's some. It may not actually play out. For you know, it might be a stillborn. There's nobody to give it to.
I didn't really mean it.
Right. So, but when it's my kid, I don't care. Like it's here. Yeah, something may happen, but I'm not thinking about that.
So on that note, with Shlimera.
Yeah.
So Shlimera, when we say Shlimera works. With just Amir of Ovad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, keep going.
Is it that Shlimera we've basically enlisted this special, like, it's I don't, like, is it that this Shlimera has extra das? Like that's
you have more das because you're giving up on it because you're basically going to die anyway. Yeah. So it's not really yours. So it's not like you weren't thinking like, I'll take it back later. There is no later.
Yeah, so it's basically Chazal saying that when you're on your deathbed and you give something to somebody, you really mean it, so much so that you don't need to do an act or a kinyan. And so by extension then, if you have somebody that's not really there but is sort of there, or at least somewhat there, that's enough too. So that's the opinion of the Rashbam. The Marami Rutenberg, one of the later Rishonim, the Rebbe of the Rush, he actually says that that's the whole issue of Davar Shelo Olam. When something isn't fully here yet, you don't have enough of a mindset. So that's the opinion of the Rashbam. Now,
what's interesting if you take that to the second extent, so then you have a Shlimera, and it's specifically only with a father to a kid.
Correct.
When the Rambam and the Perek Mishnayos qualifies it to only a Shlimera.
Yeah.
So then you need almost these two, you have both the Shlimera component adding das, and then you also have the son. It being specifically the son that's adding das, you almost need both to kind of qualify.
Right. So I think that's a bit of a stretch.
Right.
So there's another opinion as to why it works and why Davar Shelo Bo La'olam in general is an issue. If you look in source number 7, if you go to the second line, halfway through, the Ramban gives a totally different explanation. But Haramban Heshiv Alav She'ein Oso Hadin. That you can't extend, he's arguing with the Ravid, who wanted to say that you can extend Daita Shel Adam Krov Eitzel Bino to other transactions. And the Ramban says, no. Ela takana dafka b'shchiv meira. That's dafka by shchiv meira. V'lo shezocha me'achshav. And it doesn't even work now. Ela l'cheshetole. It's only for when it happens later, when the kid is born. Ke'ein Yerusha. It's like a form of Yerusha of inheritance. Why? Kidei Shaloti Tarof Daito Alav. It's a special takana of Chazal because we want to keep somebody who's on their deathbed as calm as possible. And so we make an exception that even though this shouldn't work, we'll say, you know what, this type of transaction works for you just to keep you calm. Ve'ein hadin kein bebari. Hilkach ein raya mimenu ledin Torah. Therefore, we can't extrapolate it to any other issue because this was a special rule that Chazal made to keep this guy comfy at the end of his life, to keep him calm. So, according to that, the entire issue of the entire leniency of Shchiv Meira and the entire idea of Daita Shel Adam Krova Eitzel Bino is purely a very limited kula of Chazal, just to keep this guy calm.
Wait. Okay.
And so the Rav Chanan Wasserman tries to explain in the Tosfos that the Hochisaron, the issue of Davar Shelo Bo La'olam, is not a technical thing. It's not a technical, I don't have enough mindset, it's not real enough for me. It's that you can't create halachic transactions or halachic ramifications for things that don't exist yet. Rav Chanan Wasserman phrases it as you can't create a chalos, you can't create a halachic transaction. Reb Chaim says you don't have bailus, it's a lack of ownership on something that doesn't exist yet, or on somebody that doesn't exist yet. Somebody that doesn't exist can't own anything. Chazal made a special takana just to keep this guy calm that it works, and when he's born, Beis Din intervenes and unilaterally takes it from someone and gives it to the now born kid. So we now have two very different reasons why something that doesn't exist yet can't have transactions. One is because just fundamentally, it doesn't exist, and therefore you can't do anything to it. Or it does exist, but it's not real enough. So that, I think, might explain the Rambam's transition between the Pirush HaMishnah and the Yad HaChazakah. In the Pirush HaMishnah, when he says that it's only by Amat Nashchiv Meira that a father can give a gift to his son, is because he believes that this kid doesn't exist yet. Why? Because existence is relative, and since this kid will ultimately be born and become much more real, he's not real enough yet to have any kinyanim. And it's just because of Matna Shchiv Meira that Chazal wanted to keep this guy calm and said that it works. However many years later, when the Rambam wrote the Yad HaChazakah, he changed his mind about Davar Shelo Bo La'olam. He changed his mind and said, you know what, the issue is not that fundamentally it doesn't exist. It does exist. But we just don't, it's not real enough in our minds to have enough das, to have the requisite das to create a transaction. It's like it's not here. It really is here. But just in our minds, there are technical issues. And so when it's a father and son, and I'm really, really thinking about him, and in my mind he's real, so then it's enough, and it doesn't matter whether it's a specialized matnas shiv meira or a general matnas bari. All bequests work. Yeah.
So then this just goes back to Josh's initial question of then why initially did the Rambam need both of them? In other words, why did it need to be why limit it to the son? Once we're working outside of the world of kinyanim in the first place, we're not working.
So that's because of this is, I don't know. It's a good question.
Yeah, what he said.
I don't know. It's a good question. This is just my, right. Just from what I, connecting the dots, I think the Rambam would say, like the Ramban, that Chazal wanted to keep this guy calm. And so if a guy says, you know, he's on a deathbed and he sees some, you know, friends, unborn child, so okay, if it doesn't work, it's not going to be the end of the world. But if it's his kid, so that's enough to warrant us to step in even more. That's what I would say. So that's all case number one, and that's the majority of what I want to do. The second case, which is much, much smaller, it's just the last two sources, is, well, what about marriage? A weird case, but it actually happened. So the Mishnah talks about somebody sees a woman who's pregnant, and a man says, I want to marry your unborn fetus. And then she gives birth to a girl. Is the Kiddushin Chal? Does it work? So look at the Rambam in Hilchas Ishus, source number 9. So the Rambam says, Ha'omer lechaveiro im yolda ishtecha nekeva harehu mikudesh esli bazeh lo amar klum. Says it to a random woman doesn't. If he says it to the, if he just says it to a, regarding a woman who's just, you know, some random wife of his friend, that doesn't matter. But vim haisa eshes chaverum uberes v'hukar haubar, if this woman is visibly pregnant, then harezu mekudeshes, then the kiddushin actually works if she gives birth to a girl. V'yeroeli. And then the Rambam's adding in, he's editorializing, Shitzarach lachzor ulekadei shosa me'avia, you need to do another kiddushin after she's born, kidei sheikane sosa bekiddushin she'ein bohem dofi, so that you marry her with a marriage ceremony that has no, dofi means almost falsehood to it, that there shouldn't be any fictional aspect to it. So
Does it work or does it not work?
So that's the question. Most Mefarshim say that it really does work, midoraisa, but
it's frowned upon.
Right, it's frowned upon. We don't like this. And so Chazal, the Rambam thinks that Chazal said, you know, you should just do another Kiddushin just to, for optics purposes. And in fact, the Radvaz, who lived a few hundred years after the Rambam in Egypt, there was actually a shiloh about this. There were two guys in a bar. They were drinking. One guy said, I know your wife is pregnant. I want to marry her child. Takashi gives birth to a girl.
Did the father have to acquiesce?
Yeah. Again, they were both drunk. And Takashi gives, the friend's wife gives birth to a girl, and they ask the Radvaz, is the Kiddushin Chal? And he's like, look at the Rambam. The Rambam says it is. You just got to do it again. But he says it works. You never think it would happen, but it mamish did. So the Ketzos and many other Mefarshim say from here, well, it sounds like that it does exist. It sounds like that according to the Rambam, the Kiddushin is Chal, and we can see from here that it actually is Bala Olam. So then the Ksos says, well, how do we reconcile that with our previous Rambam? I don't think it's a problem, because I think that one's the primary. But regardless, now look how the Rambam phrases it in the Pirush HaMishnah. Rambam phrases it differently, or may phrase it differently. In source number 10, he says, Im Haisa Eishas Chaveru Me'uberes, V'hukar Ubra Dvarav Kayamin. So if she's visibly pregnant and he says, I want to marry her, it works. V'myolda nekeva mikudeshes, and if she gives birth to a girl, they're married. V'nirali shetzarech lekadsha achareisha tivaled, they need to do another kiddushin after she's born, and then they can be together. Kimin haman haklolim etzleinu ein adamakna lechaveru dover shaloba la'olam, because we know it doesn't, you can't give something to somebody if they don't exist yet. Now look at the last line. V'amarnu dvarav kayomen lahachmir shenaase, according to some girsos, ke'eshes ish, or some girsos, just eshes ish. We said that it works as a chumra that she is either married or like married. So now the question is, from here, it sounds more like it doesn't work. And it's just a chumra midrabanan that we say that she's married. But really, you really need to do another kiddushin if you want to be married in actuality on a doraisa level. Especially if you have that phrase ke'eshes-ish. According to that girsa, it sounds like that she's really not married, and just rabbinically we said, you know, look.
Like kemisha lo ba'olam.
Exactly. It's the exact opposite of that. It's the exact opposite phraseology, and it lines up then, according to the Rambam, the way the Rambam evolved. According to the Rambam in the Pirush HaMishnah stage, it fundamentally doesn't exist. And it's just this rabbinic chumra that we have, that we don't want you to be so flippant about marrying unborn children, that we tell you...
Wait till they're infants.
Exactly. Wait till they're infants, at least. So we say, you know, treat it as if you're married, but you got to do another kiddushin. And then in the Yad HaChazakah, he flips around and says, no, it's really here, especially if you see the fetus. You know, if the woman is visibly pregnant... So you're married, but rabbinically we want you to just do it again just to be on the safe side. So if you have that language of ke'eshes-ish, then it really sounds like that once again the Rambam changed his opinion. However, if you don't have that phrase, if you don't have that cuff, you could just read the Rambam differently. You could say that when the Rambam said chumra, it doesn't mean a rabbinic chumra, it just means that on a biblical level we're more strict. If that's the case... then there's a difference between monetary transactions and marriage. So the question is why? So the Nitziv and Rav Moshe Feinstein, they both say that the difference is because even though there's technically a kinyan going on by marriage, what we're really talking about is not the acquisition, but about the kedusha, which is very interesting because some people like to downplay the kedusha aspect of kedusha and some people like to play it up. The Nitziv and Rav Moshe are saying, no, that there is actually this Kedusha and Isser of Eishes Ish that has nothing to do with a financial transaction.
Can you be Mekadosh something without just by Dibur?
Yeah.
So then that makes a lot of sense.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So that, and that's where they come from. They say that
you
just...
You designate this thing for...
If I say something is Hektish, that's enough. Because we hold your words to a higher bar when it comes to Kedusha. So theoretically, so Rav Moshe and the Netziv say that marriage is operates on a totally different metric.
But doesn't the Mishnah say kinyan kasev sharabia, meaning you have to be like
right? So that's what I'm saying.
It uses lush. It doesn't say
correct.
How are you hektish a woman?
Correct. So that's why I prefaced it by saying that every time someone talks about marriage, there's two sides to it. There's the more, I guess, mundane transactional element, and then there's the kedusha element. And depending on what your dvar Torah is, you play up one or the other. No, I mean, let's be honest here. Like that's the reality. So over here, if Moshe and Netziv really lean into the kedusha element, and they say that this is a totally different metric, and it actually exists in a different way than it does for financial transactions. So there's much more we can say. That's the end of the sources that I have over here. My point is that if any of you are ever talking about, you know, fetus, abortion, or unborn children in halacha, the wrong question to ask is, do they exist or not? Because the question is, it depends on what we're talking about. Existence means different things in different cases. For financial transactions, it means one thing because it may just be an issue in my mind, as opposed to by kedusha, where it may have nothing to do with my mind. It has to do with something more objective. When it comes to abortion, it might be a totally different metric.
Why can't you still say that it's a question, and as long as it exists in one element within Jewish halacha, then it exists?
Because the halachas are different.
No, but I'm saying the question of existence doesn't necessarily pertain. It's not necessarily a local question. It's a more transcending question. Do they exist?
Well,
if they exist in one arena.
Correct. So let me rephrase that. I'm working. Davar shelo bola olam means different things in different contexts.
Right.
I'm equating that with existence.
Okay.
I guess you don't have to. I think like if we would be talking to Amoraim and Tanaim, I think they would say that at least somewhat means the same thing. But again, that you're right. I guess you don't have to say that. You could say Davar shelo bola olam is relative, and it's the wrong question to ask. It's the wrong way to approach the topic. Anyway, that's the end of this.
Well, a quick question on the